All right. Well, thanks for coming back. I see a lot of familiar faces that were here when I gave a talk earlier. Again, my name is Drew Mosley. I'm with Mender.io, and we are an open source project for deploying over-the-air updates. I'm guessing this talk is going to be primarily about the key considerations in designing an update strategy and an update system. I'm guessing based on some of the questions and content earlier, discussions we had after my previous talk, there will be hopefully a lot of questions. Generally, this talk is more of a 45-minute talk, and it starts with a lot of general stuff, but I'm thinking the folks here probably don't need all the details, so I'll kind of try to blast through some of the initial slides here and get more into the meat, talking about actual updating strategies and that kind of thing. So if I'm going too fast for something here on the initial couple slides, you know, feel free to speak up, raise your hand, get my attention, and I'll be happy to slow down. But before we started designing our product, we did a lot of interviews with embedded developers, and we are specifically targeting the embedded market for this updater. So at the time these slides were put together, it was about 30 interviews, and I know it's more than that now, but I don't know how much further we've gotten. I want to talk a little bit about what's unique about updates in the embedded market, based on the discussions earlier about the number of folks that are doing embedded connected devices. It's probably not going to be nothing too surprising in there, and then we will dig into some of the actual strategies and design decisions you need to make when you're doing an update. Like I say, here's all my contact information. It'll also be at the end of the presentation. If we don't get a chance to answer your questions here, feel free to reach out to me, and I'll be happy to chat with anybody over email or Twitter or whatever. This is one of those slides that we always put in, especially when we're dealing with less technical folks and more marketing focused folks. I don't think there's any big surprises here. The net is there will be bugs in your code after you deploy it to the field, and you've got to be able to fix it. And the two primary design decisions that we went into our product design are that the updater has to be robust and it has to be secure. And I'll get into a little bit of that in the next couple of slides on what that means. But just keep in mind that that was our number one design decision. Any decisions we made, if it reduced the robustness or security, that we won't do that in our product. And for embedded, we feel that's the right way to do it. Obviously, things like secure communication, cryptographic signatures, that kind of thing, those are all required for any real system today. And in a lot of cases, a lot of the folks we talked to did their own homegrown system. Some people here mentioned doing that, and there are plenty of projects out there that you can use. Many of the homegrown systems we've seen get put in very late in their design cycle, and corners get cut. Robustness and security are done as an afterthought. So homegrown may or may not be the right thing for you. Of course, I guess if you're attending a conference like this, you're probably thinking about those things ahead of time, so it's probably less of an issue. I think these numbers here that came out of our survey, they kind of jive pretty closely to what we did the conversation earlier. In this audience, I'm kind of curious, how many people that have systems in the field have a means to deploy updates to them automatically? Okay, and how many have updates that are not automatic? Okay, so a few more not automatic than automatic, but that's another criteria that we'll get into, is it has to be automatic and simple. The primary mechanism, especially in the embedded space for updaters, is what's called the dual AB root file system. And that's basically you have two root file systems that your bootloader chooses at boot time. Other options are package-based, which is your typical desktop distribution, apt-get, or yum type updates. And then there's other less formalized ones. We've heard of people doing weird things with tarballs and all sorts of kind of crazy things that are hard to track in the long run. And this is more, this slide, like I said, is more for those that are developing their own. Typically, it's a 3 to 6 month effort. A lot of customers we've talked to, they think they're just going to slap together an updater in 1 to 2 weeks, and they find out that it there's a lot of details they hadn't considered. And another thing you might want to consider is how frequently are you updating? Are you rolling out, you know, continual updates, or is it just when there's a CVE you have to address? You know, we've talked to some customers that gave up on updating the base OS and decided they would just update their content files because they just assumed the base OS would be sound. Bottom line, most connected devices these days aren't where they need to be as far as deploying updates. However, given the early stage of the industry for most of them are not that far behind the average. We definitely see an increase in interest in over-the-air updates. Most of the conferences we go to, we definitely see more discussion around it. So that's all promising news. And obviously, the connectivity and the sheer large number of connected embedded devices is a large driver towards this. So for those that aren't in the embedded space, just a couple things to consider that may drive the decisions around an updater specifically targeting embedded. Depending on your use case, the devices may be remote, might be hard to get to. They might have unreliable power if they're running on battery. They might have unreliable network connectivity. A lot of these devices don't even have Wi-Fi. They might have 3G or something like that, which is a fairly expensive means to download over-the-air updates. So there's a lot of different kinds of things that need to be considered, you know, when you're dealing with this environment as opposed to a data center enterprise type environment. And you know, there of course are lots of things that can go wrong. So as I mentioned, robustness and security, top priority number one. All right. Beyond that, you see the other characteristics that we looked at. How easy is it to integrate with your existing workflow? How easy is it to get started? And then bandwidth consumption and downtime. Those are important for the end users, but as far as actually getting started with the over-the-air updates, the first three items on this list are really more for the system designers. So when it comes to robustness and security, what we mean by this is robustness is that you can never brick the device. If I download an update, it is installed all the way or it's not installed at all. Nothing except for the updater client ever sees a partially installed update. If there's an issue with power, if there's an issue with network connectivity, if there's some kind of corruption in the image, that's all handled by the client, and the actual system will never run in that state. In this case, the updates are always atomic. They have to be. With the dual AB root file system, that's the reason we chose that primarily was to allow that atomic update, right? If you're doing a package-based update, all bets are off. You don't know, you don't really know what the state of any given device is without a lot of Herculean efforts. The nice thing from the development perspective is this allows very consistent deployments of images. You know exactly what's on the device, and it should be exactly what you tested in the lab. You have a single binary that runs through your QA, and that's the same binary that gets installed out on your device in the field. And then additional checks, sanity checks after update. Our system by default, on reboot, if the system is unable to connect to the server, it assumes a failure. And in that case, it will automatically roll back to the previous installation. There are also additional mechanisms to do additional checks. So your particular design or use case may have additional things it wants to check. It might want to check some database sanity, or maybe a migration of some data files was done properly. So ideally there'd be a mechanism to do plugins on after the boot to be able to say, is this a sane update or not? Obviously, the updater itself handles the generic characteristics of, can I connect back to the server? Does it look like the system is up and running? But in terms of the actual specific use case, that's generally up to the system designer that's integrating the updater system. And then the final thing, of course, is ensuring the authenticity of the update. That's where the cryptographic checksums come in. You know, you use TLS to verify that you're talking to the right server, and then you have an additional check based on cryptographic identification of the images before you install them, just to make sure that you aren't installing the wrong thing. There was an incident a couple months ago with some embedded door locks that were used by Airbnb and a number of other customers, and they had some issues where the wrong firmware update was installed, and it was for, I believe, an ARM v5, and it got installed on an ARM v6 or something like that. And the lock was completely bricked at that point. So you know, you've got to be able to ensure the authenticity. You've got to be able to ensure that the target, the artifact, is targeted at the specific device. So there's a number of checks you want to do, and you always want to ensure that another update can be done. You always want to have a known good rollback. So that's, you know, in the most generic terms. In terms of integrating with existing environments, everybody's starting with a lot of history. You have a number of existing tools, you have hardware, that kind of thing. So ideally, if there is a third-party updater you're looking to go with, there are means for it to integrate into the environment that you're using. In our case, we're primarily Yocto-based. There's nothing inherent in our design that requires Yocto. That's just the low-hanging fruit that we've chosen. You know, at some point, we hope to be able to branch out from that. And then, of course, one thing to consider is, do you have devices in the field that have nothing installed that you want to install the updater on? And we've got a slide about mechanisms to do that. That's a lot trickier, because typically these updaters will require updated partition structures and that kind of thing. And that's virtually impossible to do in a robust fashion when the devices are remote and you don't have physical hands-on access to them. Another nice feature is there a standalone mode, or is there significant backend management infrastructure that's associated with the updater? We provide both a client and a backend management server, but it's possible to use a lot of these updaters just as a client running on the device, and then you write some custom scripting around it if your needs are fairly modest. You don't necessarily want to set up a management web backend to manage a large fleet of devices. For instance, you might just have a few small devices that you can throw together some bash scripts and you know, just use the client in a standalone mode, invoking the client directly on your target device. And then, you know, how extensible is it? I mentioned the ability to plug in your particular use cases and do sanity checks and that kind of thing based on your particular use case. And how easy is it to get started? Is the documentation good? Do you feel that it's well tested? Again, these are more of the non-functional requirements. So we'll move forward. And as far as your end users, bandwidth and downtime obviously are a big concern. If it eats up a lot of 3G data, that can get expensive. If it takes 20 minutes to reboot into the new image, obviously our end users don't want that. So a couple of things to keep in mind when you're considering how you might want to integrate an update system into your environment. So let's dig in a bit to some of the specific strategies. Installer strategy number one, this is kind of the one I mentioned a minute ago, where you have a system already in the field and you might want to make it, while it's deployed, somehow available for updates. And this is just an updater client that runs on the target and does some level of updates. Robustness is difficult here. Obviously, if you have to manipulate the partition structures, that's a bad idea. So it's very difficult to get a robust setup in this environment. Similar with Atomicity, it's not impossible, but it does require some extra steps to make sure that your installations are still maintained as atomic. Obviously, it will integrate very well into an existing system. It's generally just a client executable of some kind that would install into your running system. Typically, it's low bandwidth use, although I guess that depends on exactly how much data you're installing with it. And usually the downtime is fairly short. The systems can usually stay up and running while the updates are going on in the background. And once the updates are complete, then the system can do the reboot if needed. Another strategy that could get similar results is booting into a maintenance mode, where basically you have a small root file system that you boot that handles any updates. This is the biggest issue on this is the long downtime. Your system is up, you have to reboot into your maintenance mode, which then does your update, and then it reboots back into the system mode. Additionally, there could be extra reboots if there are failures in the sanity checks after booting the update. Then you would have to reboot, reinstall the original, and roll back. So rollback does potentially add quite a bit of time to your system here. And bandwidth, obviously, it's fairly high because you are downloading an entire image. There are mechanisms to minimize that using Delta updates and that kind of thing, but it can still slow things way down. And this is the one that I mentioned specifically for us that we're using, and I know I've spoken with at least a couple of folks here that use this. The big downside of having two root file systems is that it cuts down your storage quite significantly. You have to create obviously two partitions in your storage space. The way flash sizes and disk sizes are going, that's less of an issue, but there are certainly still markets where this becomes problematic. Some of the advantages here, it is robust, fully atomic, fully consistent. The assumption here is that all the logic to select whether it's A or B is handled in the bootloader so that you are able to update new kernels and root file systems. That has the implication that you're not updating the bootloader in the field, but that's a pretty standard architecture. And generally speaking, bootloaders are small enough that shouldn't be too big of an inconvenience. It integrates fairly well, but there's usually some additional partitioning that needs to be done and that kind of thing. Again, it can have the high bandwidth use, but the biggest thing is it can have a very short download time. The new image can download and be written to the storage without interrupting the end user, and when it's time to boot into the new image, then simply reboot, and the user has to deal with a single reboot time or two if we need to roll back, because rollback at that point is simply switching back over to the previous one that was known good before. And I'll mention this one just briefly. I'm not sure that it's terribly appropriate in the embedded Linux space. The idea is that you've got an external system that acts as a gateway to deploy images. This is typically used for smaller systems running embedded operating systems, sensors, actuators, that kind of thing. There may be some use for this where embedded Linux is running on the target devices, but that's not something that we've seen a whole lot. And obviously, the ability to manage the deployments, that's another thing you've got to decide if it's relevant for your use case. Do you need a web infrastructure to maintain your device fleet, or is some kind of scripting on the device simple enough in your case? So with that, I think we've got enough, a few minutes for some questions, and I will open the floor to anybody that has questions. 1 second for the microphone, and I'm not working now either. Yes.
So with our device, how do you deal with user data? It's stored in the machine and you update it
Sure. So the question is, how do you deal with user data specifically in the case of a rollback, right? So the idea being, I install a new image, maybe it does a database migration or something to a newer format, and then I decide I have to roll back. That's going to have to be done by the plugin architecture. That can't be done in any generic fashion, because the updater itself won't necessarily know. But if you've got a plugin that can come in and do some kind of post-installation migration to some new format or something, then there would also have to be a callback that says, okay, we're rolling back, you need to undo whatever you've already done. And in general, I can speak for our updater, our default partition structure, we have the A and the B root file systems, but we also have a persistent data partition. So so that is not touched on any given update. So, you know, there is definitely a place to store that data, but the manipulation of that data obviously has to be handled very carefully. Okay, very good. Any other questions? In the back.
Have you looked into snapshotting files like ButterFS or Nixos?
Right. So the question is, what about things like ButterFS or NixOS that use various techniques to not require that dual partition, but still get the atomic and robust guarantees that you get with the dual partition? And I can say definitely we have looked at it. It's not something we've implemented today, but it is. There's obviously more work involved in that. The dual AB is fairly well understood, so we pick that as from our particular project perspective, we picked that as the low-hanging fruit, but we are certainly considering those things, and I'd love to pick your brain about it later. You've probably looked into it a little bit more than I have. I've only touched it at the very surface level to understand that it's feasible, but that's about as far as I personally have gotten with it.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, so the question is, if an update fails multiple times and you attempt to write a bad update numerous times, will that affect the lifetime of the flash? Is that and it most certainly will, and that's a design decision. In our case, if an update fails, it's not going to try to reinstall it. At that point, the update has failed. It requires operator intervention to figure out what to do next. If it was just some glitch in writing the flash, and we just say, yeah, go ahead and do it again, that's fine, but an operator would need to intervene to do that. Yeah, we don't ever have any automatic reinstallation after a fail. Yes, sir. I'm sorry, can I mitigate with what? Yes, precisely. The question was on the slide, on this slide here, the asterisks next to the high bandwidth use. Yes, can that be mitigated with things like delta updates? And absolutely, it can. And that's for speaking from my project specifically, that's a feature that we are working on. Everybody we talk to, that's one of the first questions they ask. So we definitely want that feature out quickly. I know Leonard's given a talk on CA Sync. That was one of the options that we're considering. And I know there are quite a few options out there. It's kind of a tricky thing to get right, because if you decide that you require the A and B to be read-only root file systems, in some ways that makes it simpler, because then I can do the delta calculations on the server based on the image that we know was installed, whereas if the A and the B root file system are read-write, then I have to have some kind of mechanism where the calculation is done on the device, since the data may have changed and we don't know what it is. Correct. That would only help with the bandwidth use. Something like ButterFS or some of those other techniques could potentially help with some kind of an overlay structure in the file system that would help mitigate the extra need of multiple partitions. Yes.
So after applying an update, I guess you do some cryptographic attack checks. Do you do additional checks when booting up the update? So is there a rollback? Is there a potential rollback once you boot up the new system?
Yeah, so the question is, where are the checks done? So there are checks done before we boot, so that would be the cryptographic checksums and things like that, and then there are checks done after we boot. Our generic setup is, does the system come up far enough for our client executable to get running and be able to communicate back to the server? That's the minimum step we can do on the reboot. And then in our case, there's a plug-in architecture where you could plug in additional executables that that verify sanity and other means that are specific to you. All right, time is up. Thank you very much.